Okay. My name's Ken. I'm a recovered sex addict. They asked me to talk a little bit about steps 8, 9, and I'm probably going to hit 10 as well. But we're going to start out and review where we came from. We established in step 1 that we have a tendency to go on sprees once we start. It's powerlessness. Once I begin my addictive sexual behaviors, I will lose my ability to control or moderate how much time, how much money, or the types of behaviors I will engage in once I begin my selfish sexual behaviors. Well, if that were my only problem, then the simple solution would be don't act out. Well, welcome to unmanageability. How do I do that? Because my history tells me that no matter how sincere I am in my desire to never engage in those behaviors again, I will start doing them again. I will convince myself through some insane idea that just as much will be okay, that this time will be different, this time I won't get caught, this time I'll hide it better, this time, but I'll end up on another spree, I'll end up on another bender, and I will either have external circumstances stopping me, or I will drop from internal circumstances like exhaustion. And so if it's a two-part problem where I have an insanity that condemns me to go on spree after spree after spree until I kill myself, then on my own power I am in a hopeless situation. But that does not mean necessarily that I'm ready to work this program. What I need to know for sure to diagnose myself is I need to know that it's killing me, and therefore I need to bring forth my best effort to stay away from it on my own. But even after when I recognize that even my best effort to keep me alive by avoiding these behaviors isn't working, congratulations, I'm now at a place where I need something besides human power. I need something besides waiting to see what happens. I need a solution. I need it now. Well, okay, so I'm introduced hopefully to some people who have found a way of living where they're allowed to, where they once suffered from the same problem, but through this way of living they're able to stay free of the obsession, they stay free of starting their addictive sexual behaviors, and hopefully it's people that are happy and I like what they have now that they're living this way of life. And so I build this piece of hope inside of me that, wow, if they can do it, maybe if I do what they did, I'll get what they got. And that's step 2. I came to believe that a power, whatever power they found, would do for me what it did for them, which was to restore them to sanity. Okay, well, in step 3, I made a decision. I decided, you know what? Okay, I got to do this because what are my choices? My choices are to go back to my way, which is killing me, or pursue this other way. And if they tell me that if I'm going to pursue this other way, I'm going to have to completely give myself to this other way. What does that mean? It means step 3, I'm going to turn everything over to whatever power it was they found. And that means I'm going to, how do I do that? Well, I do that for the rest of my life through working this program. The first thing I'm going to have to do is look at me and figure out how I'm still, what I'm still holding on to that I'm not turning over to this power. Okay? I'm looking at my life. I haven't surrendered, you know, the past through my resentments. I haven't surrendered the future through my fears, my regrets, shame through my harms, right? I'm still holding on to that stuff. I haven't surrendered it. Through the 4-step inventory, I see how selfish that is, and that I've seen that this is what's really causing me problems. In the 5th step, I've admitted to someone else, so it's out there in the open. I said it out loud, and they've given me some perspective on it and showed me some things that I couldn't have seen on my own. And this is a necessary thing because I've admitted in step 1, I cannot rely on this gelatin between my ears to keep me from beginning something that might kill me again. And that means, in simpler terms, I'm crazy. So how can I rely on a crazy brain to give me a reality check? I can't. So that's why I get an outside perspective. What kind of outside perspective? Hopefully somebody that's worked this program. hopefully somebody that's worked, not just some, well, I need a sponsor who understands all the principles, the traditions, and does their best to honor the traditions and live the steps. That's the kind of person I'm looking for to help me. So this person, he knows where I need to be, he knows what I need to do, he's going to have some perspective on my four step, and he's going to give me that, and that's going to add to my list of things that I know are tripping me up. In step six, I've come to the conclusion that me living my way is what's taking me back to my addiction, and my addiction is taking me to an early grave. So the question becomes in step six, do I want to live or do I want to die? If I want to live, I'm going to have to live differently. In step seven, I just make a decision. You know what? Step seven, I ask God to do his part. Because guys, if I could fix me, I would have. I'm going to have somebody else's help and not another human being. It's because they got no more power to start with than I do. What I'm going to have to do is find the power that they found. And so we're going to do that by me first hitting my knees and saying, I need you in my life. I need you to take away this stuff that's keeping me from you, etc., etc. I need you to help fix me. Okay, well, God says, you know what? That's great. We can remove the cancer from your soul. We can do that. But you're going to have to do some things. If I've got cancer in my body, I'm going to have to do some things, right? I'm going to have to show up at the hospital. I'm going to have to let them focus radiation at me. I'm going to have to let them inject toxic, poisonous chemicals into my body. I'm going to have to do some things I don't want to do in order to get rid of the cancer. So in steps 8 and 9, we are subjecting ourselves to the surgery, the soul surgery of having our character defects removed. This is the critical stuff. His, you know, my higher power scalpel and clamps and instruments and all that other stuff are these people that I've hurt through my selfish behavior. And that's what we're talking about. Guys, we started step 8 way back when we did step 4. There's a promise over on page 71. They talk about this. And remember, guys, if we're, or excuse me, 70. They talk about this, that if we're not getting the promises of a step, we need to go back and review the step. The step is a meter. It's a gauge as to whether we did a good job with the step or not. So it says in that last full paragraph on page 70, it says, we have begun to learn tolerance, patience, goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we now look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. So, guys, if invariably, if I am having problems in step 8, there are many things I got to do. I got to continue. We'll get to 10, 11, and 12, but the 10, 11, and 12, they're called the living steps. They're called the growth steps. Yeah, they're exactly that. They're both of those things. I'm going to have to grow spiritually in order to find the willingness to make these amends if I'm not willing to make these amends. But I'm also going to have to go back and look at my inventory and look for enough of my part that I can find forgiveness for this person and the willingness to make this approach and see what I can do to help them clean up the mess I made in their lives. Help them see what I can do to clean up the mess I made in their lives. See what I can do to help clean up the damage I created. So, you know, we're going to go back and we're going to review 4 when we're having troubles finding forgiveness. We're going to review 4 and 5. There were some instances where I had to go back 4 times to look at some of the stuff that I was having troubles forgiving someone for. So I could see enough of my part to see, oh, okay. Now I understand what my role was in this. But more than, and we'll get to this, like I said, 10, 11, and 12 will allow us to continue to grow spiritually such that we can have a better perspective on this stuff. It's a process. It all works together. Okay. So it says over on page 76, right in the middle of the page, now we need more action, which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. And they look at steps 8 and 9 together for this reason. In step 9, they have that get out of jail free clause, except to do when to do so would injure them or others. But then they say, you know what, back on step 8, I need to be willing. I need to be willing to make the amends. I can't use that escape clause in step 9 as an excuse. Okay? Guys, there's a difference between a reason and an excuse. Okay? An excuse is a reason wrapped in a lie. And the lie is, the truth that negates the lie is that I really don't want to do this. Okay? That's the reason. That's the lie wrapping the excuse. Okay? So there's no way out on this. There's no escape clause here, really. This step 8 prevents us from using that get out of jail card in step 9 for our own ends. We got to have the willingness to do this work. The escape clause in step 9 is only there so that it will protect other people. I mean, let's look again at page 74. And it says that paragraph in the middle of the page, down at the bottom, it says the rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. That's what that whole get out of jail card is for in step 9. Except when to do so would injure them or others. And guys, I've heard this plenty of times. I've heard lots of people say it. Well, I'm one of the others, and I might be injured by this, so I can't make this amends. No, 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 no. Let's look at page 79. And it says in that first full paragraph, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given the strength and direction to do the right thing. Here it is. Here's the conviction right here. No matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing, we have to be, we must not shrink at anything. Wow, I don't think there's much wiggle room there. Doesn't sound like it to me. So I got to do something. All right. So step 8 and 9 are there together to shore up and take out the escape clauses. Okay? When we can't make an amends, we fall back on step 8 because we're willing to make the amends. If you're not willing, you're not going to get the promises of these steps. Okay? If you're not willing to do this work, basically, you haven't finished step 1 yet. That was Dr. Bob's truth. Dr. Bob had to go realize, no, this thing is killing me. I've got to work the whole program or I will die. So, the important thing is it says, well, let's see what it says. We have a list of persons we harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. So that means when I did inventory, every name mentioned in my inventory, I owe an amends to that person. Everybody, even the ones I'm resentful at, even the ones I'm having troubles with the forgiveness for. And again, if I'm having troubles with forgiveness on these people, I need to go back and look at the inventory. Because invariably, if I find that, you know, we talked about this in step 4, is that it doesn't matter if they are 99.999% wrong. It's the 0.001% wrong that I am that's keeping me angry, that's keeping me sick, that's keeping me resentful. So if we go back and look at that and we find that 0.001, we can find forgiveness because we can see how we set the whole ball in motion. Okay, we really wanted to look at this from the perspective of how to sponsor someone through this. Well, okay, so what I'm doing is I'm having them in step 8 go back and look at their inventory. Write down a list of names they find in the inventory. Write down next to it what harm they think they did. And we'll go over each one of them. every last one of them, slowly but surely. But then, out to the side of it, I'm going to have them categorize these guys. Now, we're still on step eight here. Step eight. And so I'm going to have them categorize these people on this list into one of four categories. Amends I'm willing to make right now, amends I'm willing to make later, amends I'm willing to make someday, and amends I'm not currently willing to make. Okay? So we have all these people categorized. We have them figured out. And they need to be clear. We're not at this point in step nine to figure out whether we're going to harm anyone or not by doing the amends. This is willingness only. Willingness only. If this were a perfect world and no one would be hurt by me making this amends, am I willing to do it? Am I willing to face, if the only consequence is going to be to me, then would I be willing to approach this person and make amends? That's all we're talking about. We'll address step nine when we get to that stuff. But right now, when we're making the list and we're looking at willingness to make the amends, it's right now, later, someday, and not currently willing. Okay? Everybody with me there? All right. So once we got the list, we're clear that this is not about who else would be affected. This is about completely about willingness. Now we got to start talking about who else will be affected and what kind of amends can we make. Okay? We'll even, you know, chart this out. We might even have a book or something, a tablet or something that says, you know, has at contact information out to the side of it. Did I write them a letter? Did I sit down with them, et cetera, et cetera? And that's something I want to clarify, that where there's two ways we make amends. And it says this over on page 83. They give us two options. That last full paragraph that starts with "there may," right in the middle of it, it says, "Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter." Well, okay, so that means I either go face them or I write down what the problem is and ask how I can fix it in their life, and I send them that letter. Guys, this is just technology, our new day and age. We don't operate by snail mail very much anymore. Still, the writing is important. We got to put pen to paper. So what I have my guys do is I have them write the letter, take a picture of the letter, and send it as a PDF document. You go to these people and ask them, what is your address? They're going to go, why do you need to know where I live? They don't want to give out that information. No, I've got email. You just send it to the email. They're going to do that. Okay, fine. I'll take a picture of the letter and send that as an email. Okay? Send it as a JPEG or a PDF attachment, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm going to put pen to paper, right? Okay. So that's what I have my guys do. So they've got a list of people to whom they're willing to make the amends. And so we're going to look at the right nows. And I'm going to keep them on that stuff. Who's next? Who's next? Who's next? In early recovery, what I'm having a guy do, when he's doing his 10, I want to do the instructions of step 10, and then I want to go back and ask him, okay, where are you in 9? Who's next? What have you done? And guys, with all of my guys, I have them write them a letter whether they're going to sit down and talk with them or not. Because they may have the chance to talk to this person or they may not. The person may shine them on, oh yeah, yeah, we'll sit down and make that appointment someday soon. But you know what? If this is bothering you, if this is bugging you, if this is on your conscience and you think you might go back out over it, you know what? It's time to do something. They're shining you on. They're not making time for you to sit down and talk with you about this stuff. Fine, send them the letter. You've done what you can. I always have them include, you know what? It would help me grow spiritually. It would help me in my recovery if you would give me the opportunity to say these things to your face. It would help me grow tremendously if you could respond to this stuff, and even more so if you did so to my face. I want to give you the chance to get clear of this stuff. I want to give you the chance to heal from the the damage that I've caused in your life. So, either a letter or I face them, one or the other. No phone calls, no little jot out email, oh, you know, I'm real sorry. No, I got to. Here's the deal. Here's the problem. A phone call can be pretty flippant and doesn't mean much. Same today with an email, you know. It's just, there's nothing indelible about it. But, you know, a letter is something they could ostensibly take to court. Not that they will, but that's the sort of gravity a letter has with someone. Everybody understand that? It's the same as facing somebody and looking in their eye and admitting, this is in my handwriting. This is what it says I did. This is my wrong. And I have it in writing right here. I am willing to clean this up. I'm willing to do what's necessary. So I'm going to have them write that stuff or sit down and talk with them. I'm going to have them write it anyway because they need to clarify their thoughts, need to clarify what they need to say, etc., etc., right? All right. So there are some important things about when we should make an amends. We got to understand that until, and they're going to give us some guides as to when we should make an amends, when it's time to make the amends. They're going to talk to us about our attitude. They'll give us a couple of places here. But understand that while God may be working on my attitude and my spiritual growth, He's also working on the receptors, the receiver's attitude and growth. If I push an amends and I'm out there pushing my will and forcing things, who's running my recovery? I am again. And that's not right. I need to let God run my recovery. If I don't have the willingness, it could be because that person over there is not ready to receive the amends. So God's at work on both ends of this. He's helping that other person get to a place where he can hear what I have to say, and he's helping me get to a place where I'm sincere about what I have to say. Okay? Important stuff. All right. So what are the indicators that I'm ready? Page 77, that partial paragraph at the top of the page, second sentence from the end, that's four lines up from the bottom of it. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. So we might stay away from this whole God approach. It means we don't start with that subject. It doesn't mean, because they tell us right here that we're gonna set ourselves up for them, you know, rolling their eyes at us, going, "Oh, great." They told us at the up here further on in the paragraph, three lines from the top, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. While that is a purpose for the entire program, we need to remember with this person we're making amends to, we're trying to put ourselves in a position where we can help this guy. And if we're going to make ourselves religious bores, as they say, he's never going to call us. Okay? But if he broaches the subject, that's another matter. But if we bring it up first, we might put ourselves in a position where he's not going to want to bother with us. He's going to brush us off and go, "Oh, one of those, right? A religious fanatic. Great." So we're putting ourselves in a position where at a future date, this guy may come to us and say, "Hey, I got this guy who's struggling with the same problem you're struggling with. Can you talk to him?" Because guys, while it's step 8 and 9, there's also some step 12 going on here too. We're giving other people a chance to find out why it was that we were doing what we were doing. Why we were so self-focused and self-absorbed that we were stepping on everybody. But it's showing him that now we're not, point out that it says demonstration. We're showing him that we're sorry. We're not telling him that we're sorry. We're showing him he's going to see there's a difference in us. We're going from self-absorbed to being generous. We're going from self-focused to what can I do for others. That's a difference. We're going from I'm trying to take from you to what can I give to you. Not just what can I fix, but what can I give to you. That talks more about that, so a desire to set right the wrong. Down at the bottom of the next paragraph, It says, we go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit. If I'm not, if I don't have a desire to be helpful to this person, if I haven't forgiven this person, it's not time to make the amends. I have to find the forgiveness, and I have to find the desire to be helpful to this person. So more than just repair the damage, I want to be helpful. Okay? All right? Top of the next page, 78, talks about how we conduct ourselves and our attitude. The last sentence in that partial paragraph at the top of the page, if our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. And guys, it does not matter if this person explodes at us, if this person berates us, calls us names, whatever. The result we're looking for is here, not out there. However they receive it, whatever it is that they did in response to this, that's not our concern. Doffel talked about this in The Fear. You know, if we start getting wrapped up in the result, in the results business, we're playing God again. We're trying to control other people. We're trying to manipulate other people. And that's what got us sick to begin with. So remember, what we're trying to do is clear out the stuff in here so that the power flows through our lives better. Okay? All right. They talk more about the attitude over on page 83. The last full paragraph, last two sentences. It says we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble. Remember what humility is, guys. It's not me being lower than the cockroaches. It's about me knowing my proper place in the world. I'm not better than anyone else. I'm not worse than anyone else. We are all God's children. And we are all equal, so I look them in the eye. It says we're neither servile or scraping. That means I'm not groveling. I'm not prostrating myself before them. I'm being respectful, right? But I'm not making myself lower than them. But neither am I making myself better than them. That's an important thing for our attitude. They have a specific instruction on how we make amends to the attitude we have in making amends to those closest to us. The previous page, 82, right in the middle of that first full paragraph, it says, each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. So that's actually not a bad prayer for any amends that we make, not just those that we're closest to, like our wives or our spouses in general. So we've got this list. We've figured out what amends we owe. We figured out our willingness level. What we find is that when we practice this, we get out there and make the amends that we've agreed we're willing to make right now, the laters move up in willingness. The laters become right nows. And as we go through those laters, then the somedays become right nows. And the somedays, as we're going through those, the not currently willings become right nows. It's just a matter of moving up in willingness as we go through this. You know, we got this big fear of what all this is going to cost us when we go to make these amends. But we find that when we get busy doing it, that it's really not that bad, and it feels pretty good to get clear of this stuff. And we see that we made a difference in someone else's life. The willingness grows as we make the amends. So when I've got a guy, what I'm doing every time is I'm saying, okay, who's next? Who's next? Who's next? How's that turning out? Let's look at it. Let's do it. Let's figure it out. My role as a sponsor in the amends process is to hold them accountable, you know, hold the fire under their butt, keep them moving, keep them pushing through the work, and then on top of that, making sure that they're dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's. Top of page 80. Yeah. They give us the specific process that we do before taking drastic action. That's making the amends, which might implicate other people, that's others affected, we secure their consent. If we have attained permission, have consulted others, that's our sponsor, asked God to help, okay, so we've got our knees and said some prayers, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. So, I'm going to do the practical, mechanical process is, number one, I got to have the right attitude. We've talked about that. Two, I've checked to make sure with my sponsor that there is not other people that are going to be affected. And if they are, can I approach them? If I can't approach them without causing harm, then I don't. I don't get permission. I don't get to do the amends. But if the other's affected, I can approach and I can get their permission, then I can start the process of the idea of walking up to this person and saying, can we get coffee? I got to talk to you about some stuff. Okay? And then, so we've gotten permission from the others affected. I've consulted others. I've called my sponsor right before I go in to talk to this person. And then I say a prayer, ask God to help. God, help me with this. God, help me keep this attitude that I've got right now when I talk to this person. And then I go to it, plain and simple. And that's the mechanics of it. Now, practicality. I mean, there are some situations, some amends we'll never be able to make because others will be implicated. And those others implicated, if we approach them and ask permission, it will cause more harm. Okay? Well, let's talk about, I mean, we're sex addicts, guys. I mean, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but think, how many of you slept with married women, right? Well, if they're still married to that guy, we can't make that amends. Because we owe an amends to both of them. And if he doesn't know that she slept with us, then we're causing more problems. We don't need to be throwing a turd in their punch bowl, right? So I can't approach him, I can't approach her to ask if I can make amends to him, and I can't approach him and ask if I can make amends to her because it's gonna cause problems in their relationship. I can't make that amends. But again, there's no get out of jail for free. If circumstances change, I gotta be willing to go through with it. They get a divorce, something, right? Still, I gotta be careful because others might be implicated. Before I go to him, I gotta get her permission. Before I go to her, I gotta get his, well, no, she's free and on her own. I don't have to get his permission now that they're divorced, okay? But I do have to get her permission to talk to him because he may not know. I don't have the right to throw someone else under the bus, okay? Me and Mark, in our wild, crazy days, we go out and steal a car, okay? Mark, it was your idea. I owe for that car, all right? And if Mark's still in his disease, he's out doing what he wants to do and having all his fun, he hadn't reached bottom yet, God bless him. I go to Mark and say, look, Mark, I'm trying to clean up my life, and one of the things I got to do is I got to clean up for that car. And I got to go approach these people and take responsibility for it. But I'm going to assure Mark, unless you're willing to go with me, I'm not even going to mention you. I'm going to take 100% responsibility. I don't owe for half the car. I don't get to go in there and say, well, I wasn't alone. There was somebody else. I don't get to do that. My responsibility is I stole the car. I need to take financial responsibility for it. Now, when Mark decides to get clean and he owes an amends, then it's his choice. He can either go to the guy and tell him, you know, well, I was with Ken when he did that. And really, it was my idea. And I know that Ken's paid you back all that money, but I wanted to take my share of the responsibility, and I'm going to pay Ken his half. Okay? But that's Mark's decision. That's not my decision. That's when Mark finds bottom. Let's hope he finds it soon, okay? Poor guy. It's going to be all right. No, it's not going to be all right. He's going to die. But he doesn't know that yet. Anyway, the point is, I don't throw him under the bus. I slept with that woman who was married. I don't throw her under the bus in talking to the husband. If I have permission to talk to the husband, the only thing I'm going to say is, I'm not going to, again, not throwing her under the bus. The only thing I'm going to tell him is, I did not respect your wedding vows. What does that mean? It means what it means. Will you tell me specifically? Let's not get involved in what they might or might not ask us. That's all we're willing to say. I was not respectful to your wedding vows. I did not honor your marriage. That could mean that I flirted with his wife in hopes of getting her. It could mean that I got her. But you know what? I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say I did not respect your wedding vows. Okay? Financial amends, I'm going to have the guy. Look, we need to look at your finances. How much money do you owe? How much money do you make? What are you spending money on? Let's look at what your costs are, what your daily living costs are. Let's look at where you're in the red and where you're in the black. Where can you change things up so that you've got more black to give out to these people you owe? I'm going to have them look at their debt load and what percentage they owe to who. And above their cost of living, they need to divide that accordingly. And then they need to go to these debtors and say to them, you know what? I owe you money. And we again, it says we make no bones about it was because of our acting out. Guys, if I owe credit card companies, they know where I'm spending my money. What am I afraid of telling them about all this stuff, right? They already know. They know all these online memberships. They know these strip clubs I've been going to. They know these massage parlors. They know this stuff. Hello? Who do I think I'm hiding it from? Okay. That being said, there are some people that I need to tiptoe with this stuff. You know, when we go to make amends to family members, friends, this is a subject matter that makes them uncomfortable. And we want to give them the out clause. We want to give them the opportunity to say, I don't want to talk about this. We become sensitive to their comfort level in this stuff. We sit there and we watch them. We watch how they react to this stuff. We tiptoe into it. We say, well, I want to talk to you about some stuff that happened in the past. Okay. Well, I wanted to talk to you about some of the ways that I treated you in the past. Okay. Well, some ways that might have made you uncomfortable. Oh. Okay, well, we need to give them the out right there. When they've made the connection, we can see they made the connection in their mind, what we're talking about. They remember it. We're bringing up something, and you can see the discomfort all over them. You need to say, okay, if you don't want to talk about this, if you're not ready to talk about this, I'm okay with us leaving it right here, and maybe someday in the future, maybe not. If you're never comfortable with this, we can talk about it again. But I just want you to know, I'm willing to admit what I did, and I'm willing to do what you think is necessary for me to make it right. And let them, don't drag them through the mud. Don't drag them through this stuff. If they don't want to face this stuff, that's okay. What they know is that we're willing to. So we have to be sensitive to people. We have to be sensitive about what comfort level they are with this stuff. We have to tiptoe into it. We have to check the temperature of the water. Got to feel it out and make sure it's safe. We got to make sure they're okay with what we're about to talk about. Right? We want to make sure they're all right with this stuff before we start dragging them through it. Okay, so... Wow, there's a big, huge controversy out here in our fellowship about what to tell the wives. She wants a full disclosure. Oh my goodness. Guys, why? Well, to build trust. Uh-uh. Trust is not based on knowing. Trust is a gamble. Trust is an exercise. It is not based on past. It is based on, am I willing to take the risk? It's not based on knowing everything that happened. Guys, if a co-addict's drug is control of the addict, if I give my co-addict a complete disclosure, am I not just handing an alcoholic a bottle of alcohol? It's not my job to enable people in their disease anymore. I've got to stop harming people by letting them by giving them what they want, right? What they want may be a good thing, it may not be a good thing, but let's look at it. This is a co-addict. Giving them more control is not necessarily a good thing, right? Does this mean I'm willing? If I am not willing, I will pay the price. This is the out clause, remember? We're shoring it up with the willingness. I'm willing to make the complete disclosure, but to do so is going to cause more harm. Okay? And if I'm not willing to do this, I will pay by slipping. And I've seen so many guys, you know, wipe their brow and go, wow, I don't have to do this. Thank God. No. There's no out clause. You have to be willing to do it. And what that means is you got to be ready to do this, but you can't. That means it's a rock you're going to be carrying to your grave. And it will be a heavy anchor around your sobriety. But you are still required to carry it. Remember, considerate of others, but hard on ourselves, right? They said it over on page 74 a little more specifically. They said, we don't say anything to our wives or parents that might hurt them. Right in the middle of that same paragraph. It may be one of our own family, but we cannot disclose anything to our wives or our parents which might hurt them or make them unhappy. We can't do it. Plain and simple. It's not my job to give them more control. I'm just enabling them in their addiction. Okay, so, well, what do I do? Well, they told us over on page 82, perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Let each might pray about it, having the other's happiness uppermost in his mind. Keep it always in sight that we're dealing that with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk face-to-face combat. Look, I'm going to have to make up for my shortcomings as a husband. Not just in my infidelity, but just in the general way I've treated her. I'm going to have to do more than just be nice to her now. I'm going to be above and beyond. I'm going to have to be a better husband, period. So it may not be that I attack the problem right on the front. It may be that I need to go around by just being a better husband. Now, guys, they go back on page 81. They say, whatever the situation, we have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we've been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. I have been selfish. I have been dishonest. I have been inconsiderate. Right? I need to admit those things. But the specifics of it, oh my goodness. Now, they talk about here that we don't need to name another person on whom they can vent jealousy. That includes what kind of websites I was looking at. Right? If she sees that I was looking at women who have this particular feature that she doesn't, come on. That's not helping. We're only enabling her and her idea that she can control this if she looked a certain way. Right? That's co-addiction. Okay? We're only enabling them in this idea that if they do a certain thing or look a certain way or act a certain way, you know, that they had the power to control our addiction. The truth is, guys, we all know this. It had nothing to do with them. It had to do with us and our sickness. So we need to not enable them in this control idea. Now, guys, they also say that there are some situations. And I will tell my guys, yes, there are situations. If you have been unfaithful to her, then you need to, A, be abstinent with her for a while. Until you get tested to make sure you're clear. And at the same time, you need to tell her she needs to get tested. Make sure nobody caught any bad bugs, right? Not bed bugs, bad bugs. Understand? So, yeah, there are circumstances where we do disclose that we have been unfaithful. But on the whole, why? What is our motivation? Why are we trying to make this disclosure? Is it to control Is it to keep the marriage? The marriage is either going to dissolve or not dissolve based on God's will, not on what we do. We have to practice this program. And remember, our recovery is not dependent on whether we stay married or not. Our recovery is dependent on our relationship with God, not on our relationship with our spouses. And what's the priority in our life? Is the priority is to save our marriage. We're in here for the wrong reason. Right? Our priority must and always be to stay sober. Now, that's what brings us in the door. But as we live this way of life, we come to make our priority, I want to be in a better relationship with God. But it's never about controlling external circumstances. It's never about bringing about some sort of outcome like Adolfo said. It's not about saving a marriage. It's not about keeping out of jail. It's not about saving my job or career or reputation. We said any lengths, didn't we? That means all of those things may go right out the window. What's more important to us is that we stay sober. Because why? Because if we can't stay sober, we're going to be dead. And if we're dead, we aren't married anyway, right? I mean, how married am I going to be if I'm dead? How married am I going to be? How free? What's it going to matter whether I'm in jail or not if I'm dead? Plain and simple, right? If I understand that this is a deadly illness, I need to understand what my priority is. And this is, you know, when I'm sponsoring somebody, this is adamant that I need to find out early on. What is their deal? Why are they here? If you're here just to save a marriage, I can't help you. I'm not in the marriage saving business. It's not what I do. I show people how to get into a relationship with God the same way I did. You're just trying to get your life back on track. Whose track? Right? What's going to happen? If this is a life program, what's going to happen to the guy or gal who gets their life back on track after working this program? They're going to stop working this program. I'm not interested in working with that person. I'm interested in a person who wants to work this program because they don't want to die. If they're just looking to save something else, nothing I or anyone else can do for them. It's in God's hands. I'm out of time, aren't I? Okay. Well, then I will cover 10 and 11 next week. Thanks, I'm Ken.